Good morning and welcome to the Full Totness Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM with me, Peter Shearn, on Tuesday, 13th of April. Sun shining out there on a beautiful, bright morning. It's absolutely lovely out there. And on the show today, we'll be talking to Janie Francis, mental health and associated subjects. And yes, we'll be talking to Janie a little bit later on. She's chosen the music for the morning. And it's about lifting ourselves up, making ourselves a little bit brighter under the current circumstances. And maybe we're feeling a bit brighter because we're allowed out now. And we're starting off with her first song, which is The Long Day Is Over by Norah Jones. Norah Jones, The Long Day Is Over. And we are joined this morning by Janie Francis. Good morning,
Peter.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine. You went a little bit quiet there.
I must face the screen. I can't turn my head away.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
That's all right.
If we were in the studio, I could fix you with my eyes and keep you in my eye line. That would work. But
I can't imagine that you're doing that.
hopefully we can get back to the studio soon. But we'll see. Have you been out at all since? Well, yesterday when we've been allowed out and allowed to go to shops. Have you ventured out?
Well, had a fantastic walk on the coast around from Salcombe towards Sawmill Cove. It's a really, really beautiful stretch of coast.
Yes, yeah.
So I had a really beautiful walk there with a friend and a friend's dog, so that was really lovely.
Ah, oh, it's lovely. We've been allowed to walk for a couple of weeks, haven't we? And it's a lovely thing to get out and do. It changes your worldview quite a lot when you get out places like that.
Yeah. Before we start, I just want to say good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning.
Ben is, Brian is my eldest nephew who told me that he'd be listening live this morning from where he lives in Lewes in East Sussex. So hello, Ben.
Well, that's a beautiful place as well, Lewes.
Yeah, he gets to walk on the downs quite a lot, I think, and by the sea. Yeah.
I actually have, it's on a shelf in my vision over there in the corner of the room. I have a cannonball, which I found on the beach near Lewes. And it's a genuine cannonball from the, 1066 and all that.
Really?
Yeah. And it was amongst all the pebbles, because a lot of pebbly beaches, as Ben will know, ran that region. Yeah. And it was just sitting there, and I just picked it up off the pebbly beach. And I thought, this isn't a pebble. This is a cannonball. And it was a cannonball. How about that? It's one of my prized possessions. And then I was showing it to a friend in our kitchen who lives in Bristol. This was a few years back now. And it's a very tactile thing. It's being a ball of stone, basically. And she was in our kitchen and she was just flipping it from one hand to the other and then dropped it and smashed one of our ceramic tiles on the floor.
I thought you were going to say she smashed the cannonball.
No, I don't know how you would break that cannonball. I think it's pretty, pretty solid. So, yeah, hello, Ben. Got a whole story out of that, didn't we?
Yeah.
So, we're talking about rest, relaxation and such like. But in the meantime, I was just reading here on the Guardian website because about COVID-19 and us being all locked away, which is a very unnatural situation. What happened here? We've got several things actually on mental health here which are of interest, but I'll try and control myself. The Guardian view on mental health: this emergency requires a response, and this is because the psychiatrists, there's a specific group here that you would know of but I don't, Royal College of Psychiatrists, have highlighted a sharp rise in mental ill health that began after the first lockdown in March 2020. An analysis of NHS and Office for National Statistics data say the NHS services were struggling to cope with the demand. Now, you're not involved with the NHS services, are you, Janie?
Oh, no. Well, actually, I do happen to know just from people who contact me that there's at least an 8-week waiting list for the normal counselling service that would be available through a GP.
Really? Is there? That's a long time to wait for mental health.
That's because a long time if you're feeling really, you know, like you really need support. It's a really long, it's too long, you know, for somebody who's feeling very desperate.
Because it is something that needs immediate help, isn't it? Mental health to a large extent. Is that, incorrect with that? Or?
Well, if someone's in a crisis, like a crisis needs help immediately, you know, any kind of crisis. So, yeah, so if someone's it's got very depressed, and, you know, waiting 8 weeks could really, you know, be the last straw for someone. I don't mean to be overly dramatic, but, you know, it doesn't surprise me to hear that report from The Guardian, because we've been, you know, deprived of so much that we would normally have to maintain our well-being. And I think a huge part of that is our social contact. You know, I think that's so vital to our well-being. And then also for people who are living alone, I think we can easily overlook the importance of physical contact and physical touch.
Yes.
And if you think, like, somebody might not have had any physical touch for 6 months. Even, you know, like we hug our family or a friend when we meet. That's a really long time not to have any.
It's actually longer. It's a year for some people because if you are alone, living alone, officially, you won't still be able to get a hug or, you know, make physical contact with someone, even put their hand your hand on their shoulder to some extent. I will say I went out yesterday for a short meeting and I went down to the waterside and it was packed with people and loads of people, that's, you know, all outside on tables. drinking in the afternoon. I thought it was outrageous. I went for coffee and I was just amazed everybody was drinking beer. But there you go. I suppose it's a celebratory moment. But what I was getting at was just being amongst a hubbub of people was an extraordinary new thing.
I know. Yeah, I felt the same actually. And I know this isn't quite on the topic that we originally suggested, but I do think we may be surprised by the impact of coming out of this, you know, and that we may underestimate actually possibly getting sometimes overwhelmed by the amount of contact that we have again, you know, because we've been so used to being secluded and distant and masked, and then to sort of open up to a lot of contact and stimulation may feel overwhelming initially, even though we're all longing for it. So I think it's good to have some awareness around that and, you know, kind of pace ourselves in terms of how much contact we expose ourselves to.
Yeah, I would tend to, that makes sense, because one of the things that I was also semi-alarmed at the level of lack of distancing and things going on with the everybody at the tables. Now, that might be just a perception rather than anything else, because it was hands off. hats off, that's what I'm trying to say. Hats off to the waterside running a very strict ship down there. You know, they're doing all the right things, so don't get me wrong, but there were a lot of people there in, you know, on outside tables, and you know, there was an anxiety within me in that situation as well. And so
I don't think you'll be alone in that, because I think our impulse to get close to each other and connect is so strong that, you know, people won't be able to help themselves in some cases. So trying to balance that with still having some awareness of safety, I think is going to be a delicate thing, really. And I think there will be people feeling anxious. You know, that's going to be part of transitioning back.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to be something to, like I say, keep in our awareness and not be surprised by if we do feel anxious at times, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's hard. I mean, I think when we finally get the masks off, that's going to be quite something as well, you know, when we can just see each other's faces most of the time when we've been quite hidden from each other.
Yes, you can't see a smile behind a mask. And it's interesting that that hadn't had an effect when I've noticed this in myself. If you go shopping in Morrison's, for example, and everybody's wearing a mask around you, that lack of facial communication has gone because of the mask, and you don't know if someone's scowling at you or whether they're smiling at you or just have a neutral resting face that doesn't mean anything at all. But the point is, I think what I've felt whilst I'm down there with everybody in masks, I think I've gone for a negative connotation and assume that everybody's scowling. It sort of makes you feel a bit sort of fearful in the space. And that's my stuff. There you are. I've revealed too much now.
I don't think you're alone in that, because, you know, we're such social creatures, and we also have all our, you know, still have our animal instincts wired into the brain. And some of that, you know, an animal is always looking at the environment, looking at other creatures to check if it's safe. And I think we still have that somewhere in our survival instinct.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
It's not surprising that you feel like that, because you can't read. You're not getting the information that would give you what you need to feel safe.
So it's a fallback position. It's be prepared kind of thing, because you haven't got the right data to work with.
That's right.
Yeah.
And again, you know, if we go back to the Guardian article, it's like there's one piece that we're really missing. You know, smiling at people can just really lift your spirit, you know, sometimes. I mean, I've often experienced walking down the street and just exchanging a lovely smile with someone, and I can feel my whole energy, you know, brighten up from that little exchange.
Yeah, it does change things, doesn't it? Just and it was one of the things moving from Bristol to here many, many years ago. And in Bristol, as in all major cities, there is a sort of locked in persona that people generate. Partially to because there's too many people to interact with. It's not an unreasonable thing. But coming here with fewer people, one of the first things we noticed was people say hi as you pass them in the street or if you're in a back lane more than anything else. And, you know, you get a smile or a nod or a recognition of your existence. And that actually had an amazing effect on how we our well-being. You just thought this place is friendly and it's got people in it that respond to you, whereas living in a city it just is not the nature of the beast, really.
And I think you used a phrase there that sums up something important when you said recognition of our existence. And you know, in relation to COVID and mental health, you know, you could say that, you know, we've lost a lot of the ways that we recognize each other, you know. So again, if you're living alone and isolated, that recognition of our existence is not there, really. We need to see ourselves being seen to sort of feel our shared humanity, and that's something that we've lost a lot of in, you know, how we've had to live over the last year.
So self-worth could have been, almost certainly has been damaged over this period of the last year with the current situation.
I think it's been really impacted, because, you know, we get a lot of our validation from how other people respond to us and interact with us. And I'm not saying that we have to be dependent on that, but I think it's very common for people to look for that from other people. And again, you know, that's been so restricted. So, yeah, it really doesn't surprise me that the mental health services are, you know, seeing an increased demand.
Yes.
I think a lot of people, especially in my line of work, have been anticipating that right from the start. I remember saying to people, you know, I think there's going to be quite a big fallout in terms of mental health, and here it is, really.
Well, that's what the Royal College of Psychiatrists say. And if there's anyone listening that feels that they could use some help right now, because there's an 8-week waiting list from the idea of calling your doctor saying I need some help, and then being told, yeah, we'll give you a call in 8 weeks' time. This is something you can actually help with right here, right now, isn't it?
I can. I'm still offering low-cost counselling because I know there are many people who can't afford the full rates. So that's still available, and you can find all my information on my website, Ways to Contact Me, and that will be also posted with the podcast.
Yes,
afterwards.
Yes, it will. Yeah. But you're also offering a half hour consultation. Is that still the case?
Yeah, a free half hour consultation for people to find out if they feel happy to work with me, and I can tell them more about how, you know, the whole process.
And even that in itself may be of great help, just knowing that it can be done. Because I think one of the things that you get in that situation, if you're getting to the state where you're calling your doctor about your mental health, you probably do need some help pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think we need to move on to the relaxation and rest ideas that you wanted to say, because I've taken you completely off topic. I do apologize for that.
It's all related.
Shall we have a bit of music in the meantime to break up those, that move on to the next section, which you've chosen Tracy Chapman, and I'm Ready. Is there a reason why you've chosen that one specifically?
I just particularly love this track.
That's a good a reason as any. I'm Ready. Thank you. From the New Beginning album, and that was chosen by Janie Francis, who is with us now. And we're talking about, that was actually very chilled, very relaxed piece of music, and that's sort of what we're aiming at, isn't it? Relaxed, being relaxed, relaxation techniques, things like that.
Well, I just want to give a perspective on rest.
Oh yeah.
Because you know, we have this phrase risk averse, and I would like to coin a phrase rest averse.
Ah, now that's interesting. Yeah, go on.
I think that my observation of how we're living is that there's so much emphasis on doing and achieving that we're out of balance quite strongly in terms of balancing that with our need for rest. And I see that people have difficulty giving themselves permission to rest, and that there's often a judgment around that, you know, like if I feel really tired, that somehow I need to push through this, keep myself going, have another coffee, you know, pep myself up. And when the body's actually saying, please, I need to stop, I need some rest. And we often override that to our own detriment in terms of our physical and emotional and mental well-being.
Now, something I very much recognize in myself and also someone else in this household, very much pushing through. I think pushing through is very much a term that gets used in this household a lot.
Sorry, I missed that. What was the term?
Pushing through.
Pushing through. I mean, I think it's very interesting in terms of a sort of cultural and kind of cultural attitude that places so much emphasis on being active and, you know, striving, pushing through, like you say.
Being useful.
And yeah, if we look into nature, you see that nature, you know, in the seasons, there's always a time of, we could say, deep rest, where everything's underground, quiet, and resting. And, you know, I think as human beings, we need that cycle ourselves. I'm not saying necessary to, you know, in following the seasonal pattern, although I think there's some value in that. But, you know, in our own weekly cycle or daily cycle, to really respect the need for rest and not to view it as a deficiency or a failing. And then also to recognize when we allow the rest, it's almost like then energy spontaneously comes back up again. We don't have to force it or push, you know, in the way that you've just described.
Right. So would you say it's more efficient to, if you're doing it on an efficiency basis, to actually do that resting period, if your body makes it feel like you should maybe take it easy for an hour or so, to actually follow that?
I would shy away from the word efficiency, because I think it's still in the context of getting things done.
Yeah. No, I recognised I said that. As the word came out of my mouth, I thought, oh, no, I sound like a knob now.
Frame it more in terms of self-care and well-being. And, you know, if you think about it, if you know that you feel tired, I know that obviously we all have demands and sometimes it's not possible to rest, but even when there is the chance to rest, often we don't. We still feel like we've got to be doing or active in some way. And it's, you know, it's like sometimes trying to run on empty. You know, we haven't got enough fuel, or we could say our batteries aren't charged enough, and we still think that we should be able to, another word I think is perform, you know, at the same level all the time. And we've got this incredible organism that has so much intelligence, and if it's telling us that we're tired, then, you know, I think as much as we can, it's important that we respect that and listen to that. And, you know, when we can, I'm not trying to minimize, you know, all the demands that people have in their lives, but when there is space to feel really like it's really okay to stop and rest and take a break. And you know, being busy on the mobile phone, for me, I wouldn't consider that real rest, because you're still receiving a lot of stimulation and, you know, there's still quite a lot of activity going on.
So what about those people, like, now I'm looking back at myself 7 years ago, this is not my world now, but my world then. 7 years ago, I was working in my own business, and it actually generated my own pressure cooker of work. And the idea of me taking an hour off or 2 hours off and having a rest seemed absolutely anathema. It was impossible to do. I would have told myself back then, that's not a viable option. I have to get all this stuff done. How do you speak to that person that was me 7 years ago?
Well, how did it go? How did you get on living like that?
I was wired, pretty much. So, you know, and when I did stop, I just sort of completely stopped. So it was, yeah, I was worried. But again, I didn't sleep very well because if I wake up in the night realizing that I've missed something during the day or that I'd made a mistake or whatever, and you'd wake up in the night and then you couldn't get back to sleep again. So it wasn't an ideal situation, I'll be honest. But my thoughts are, if you spoke to me 7 years ago and you say what you need to do is take a bit of time out, how would you convince me to do that? Because I'm manically looking at you going, I can't, I haven't got time. How would you respond to me if I came at you like that? You'd probably actually say, can someone take this person out of the room, I would imagine. But
no, not at all. No, I think I would explore it more with you, like just asking you the question as I just did, you know, how's it going and what's the impact of living like this? And I think people aren't necessarily aware of the impact, you know. I mean, obviously not sleeping well is something very tangible, and that's often the case for people, and feeling wired. So even when you have maybe you can take an afternoon off or the weekend, you still have this sense of being wired. And to really inquire into whether that's actually a beneficial way to live, and whether overall, you know, maybe you can run your business and still give some attention to your well-being in smaller steps, you know, so it's not like, okay, I'm going to have to take the whole afternoon off, but can I just take 10 minutes away from the computer, go and sit outside if it's sunny? Can I take 5 minutes and go and sit down and just let myself breathe a bit more fully? Mm. You know, so just trying to build in little spaces during the day to have some bring awareness to it, because I think it's so easy to get on that treadmill where we kind of lose connection with ourselves and how we're actually feeling. And even how we're feeling physically. And, you know, so many people are so pumped up on caffeine. You know, I've often thought to myself, if we took the coffee machines out of offices, would those offices still be able to run? You know?
Yes, I can imagine
that. I'm not sure
that
they would.
I'm just thinking
and
back
obviously,
to...
You know,
well, I was thinking about techniques, I guess, that would have been a useful thing to do, would have been to maybe set a message on your phone, the equivalent of the back in 5 minutes sign on a shop door, and create a phone version of that as a message saying, currently experiencing high levels of content, therefore we need to please call back in 5 minutes' time, that sort of thing.
Wouldn't that be great if that was like very acceptable in an office? Currently experiencing high levels of stress,
yeah.
Gone out to decompress.
Indeed, yeah. I think maybe that should be a thing. I think maybe we should start a campaign that allows you to do that. Because there is a point where when you get to a high level of that, like sort of thing, you start making mistakes, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And then, you know, I think there are other questions to ask of, is it worth it? Is it worth driving yourself so hard? What's the cost of living like this?
You've gone away from your microphone a bit. That's it. That's better.
Sorry. You know, I think it's worth asking some deeper questions, like what's the cost of living like this? You know, maybe you've got a successful business, but how is it impacting maybe on your personal relationships? How is it impacting on your physical and emotional well-being? And I don't think it's like one or the other, but it's just trying to bring things more into balance, you know? And I think that's really essential. And, you know, we could say that we have been living very out of balance in so many ways. And there's something I want to just bring up from another culture after we've had the next piece of music, because I think it's quite an interesting perspective.
Good idea. Yeah. So let's have a bit of music and get to the new influence. You've chosen Babylon by David Gray. Any particular reason?
I remember hearing it when I was driving and just kind of, I don't know, it sort of conjured up cruising along on a sunny day and chilling out and that sort of thing.
Friday night, I'm going nowhere. All the lights are changing green to red. Turning over TV stations, situations running through my head. Looking back through time, you know it's clear that I've been blind, I've been a fool. To open up my heart to all that jealousy, that bitterness, that ridicule. Saturday, I'm running wild, and all the lights are changing red to green. Moving through the crowds, I'm pushing, chemicals are rushing in my bloodstream. Only wish that you were here, you know I'm seeing it so clear. I've been afraid to show you how I really feel, admit to some of those. If you want it, come and get it, crying out loud. The love that I was giving you was never in doubt. Let go of your heart, let go of your head, and feel it now. Let go of your.
David Gray, White Ladder album, Babylon, from it, chosen by Janie Francis, who's with us this morning. We're talking about mental health. And you were just before that, you flagged up that you wanted to bring in another influence.
Yeah.
Oh, you've gone very quiet, Janie.
Sorry. So there's a symbol that I think I just asked you in the break whether you know it, and you said you did, where it's what's called the yin-yang symbol that I think people may have seen because it's used, you know, in all sorts of different ways. And it's the circle with what looks like a white fish and a black fish kind of
intertwined,
connecting inside the circle.
I see them as inverted commas, actually, sort of single.
Okay, that's a good way. Yeah, inverted commas, whatever. And in the black bit, there's a white dot, and in the white bit, there's a black dot. And what they actually symbolize, they come from China, the symbol. And originally, it comes from a branch of Chinese philosophy and spirituality called Taoism, which some people may be familiar with. And within that, these, the black and the white represent, you could say, two basic principles of what are called yin. So that's the black, and the white is yang.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in relation to what we're talking about, the yin would correspond to times of rest and recuperation and nourishment and quiet. And the yang is the sort of active, more external, going out principle. But what I, the reason I just wanted to refer to it is why they're represented in that circle is to demonstrate the importance of balance between the two, and that they support each other. So, you know, when we really allow the yin aspect, the resting, the quietness, maybe withdrawing, that naturally moves into the yang and the active and growing and coming out, which you can very clearly see in the seasons, which is what I was referring to earlier.
Hmm.
But that whole philosophy is based on the importance of the balance. And it's not like one is more important than the other. It's all about the equilibrium and the relationship between the two. So I just wanted to bring that in because there, it's very strong, you know, in that...
And ancient as well.
Ancient.
We can learn a lot from past societies.
Yeah, there's a classic text called the Tao Te Ching, you know, which goes into it in great depth in sort of a series of verses. And I think it's about 2,000 years old, you know. So, yeah, it's very ancient.
Mm.
And there's a lot of deep wisdom in it, I feel, about this, you know, the need to live in balance. And it's not just with each other, it's with the earth and all the beings that share the earth with us. And so, you know, you could sum up our culture and our society as saying it's very yang-driven, it's very unbalanced in favour of the yang, you know, and there are lots of areas of life that we could see that in if we had, you know, to look at it more, but... So,
even in lockdown, there has been, it feels to me, and it comes from internalizing myself a little bit now, but a little bit of, you know, this need to be useful and get things done needs to be balanced out by allowing yourself to recuperate.
Yes, and I think the need to be useful is very close to our sense of feeling valuable. And that we've associated our value with what we do. And actually, perhaps we could say that we just have value because we're here. Every life form has value because we're here, we're alive. You know, a tree has value, a frog has value, a human being has value, you know, without having to prove that. But as human beings, I think we get very conditioned to feeling that we have to prove our value by what we do in the world. And so if we're not doing and we're not being useful, we can feel like we're, you know, we, like you mentioned, touched on earlier, you know, that our sense of self-worth is then affected because it's so related to the doing, rather than knowing that actually just by being alive, we all have equal value.
Yes, and we're sort of groomed with this, aren't we? As we grow up, as you at school, quite reasonably, you're asked, "What are you going to do with your life in the future?" I remember that being the strangest question of all because I didn't have the first idea. But
no, of course not.
And knowing, but I think the pressure comes from people around you, who do apparently have the full idea of what they're going to be doing and know what they want. And so that, I think, is where a lot of that pressure comes from, is trying to keep up with the Joneses, as they used to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to hear about some indigenous cultures where I know there's a particular culture in Africa where the question is not what you're going to do. It's sort of like, what is your particular gift that you've come here with? And not that the child would be necessarily asked that, but that the adults and the community around that child would be sort of trying to see, you know, what is the gift that this child has, and how can we support that child to express this gift, which is, you know, it takes it out of a sense of measurement and achieving, and more of a sense of sharing and a kind of natural flowering in a way, which I find rather lovely.
And actually, you've brought to mind, as we're talking, it's sort of coming into my mind, you think about society as it currently is. There is maybe far too much pressure on economics, creation, making things, making money, when from your, you know, if you've got a child that has a specific ability or skill, or can do things that other people can't do, that leads you more into a cultural angle of living, doesn't it?
It does. And then that whole emphasis on sort of economic growth, and, you know, we only have to look around us on the earth to see what a devastating impact that has had. So that's another area where we've been so far out of balance, you know, with this drive of sort of conquest, and let's just see what else we can develop, regardless of the cost on, you know, the natural resources, other ecosystems, other beings who share the planet with us, you know. So I think we're just touching on all these examples of what I would call, if we use the yin-yang model, of, you know, yang imbalance, really gone far out of relationship. And we need to, you know, I think there has been, for all the negative things of COVID, perhaps that, you know, the enforced rest for some people, if they've been able to rest, you know, in a time of more quiet, perhaps more space for some reflection, has actually been a really positive thing, and a chance to question, you know, the way we're living, and is this really healthy? And in many ways, I would say it isn't, you know. Like, you know, I'm going to get a bit fired up now if you give me any more space. But, you know, we're the only species that destroys our own home, you know, and how crazy is that?
It is. I must admit, I was hoping when in the middle of sort of lockdown, it felt like a reimagining might be possible of where we're headed, especially in the UK. But I'm not seeing the evidence of that from our betters, let's put it that way.
Well, I don't think we will see it, but I'm plugged into so many different kinds of networks where there is a huge amount of reimagining going on.
Oh, you disappeared again there, Janie. Come back.
Sorry. I don't know what happens with it. It doesn't seem to happen on Zoom calls, but anyway, I'm here.
Yes, you're back again.
Yeah, so I think we won't see the reimagining necessarily immediately in mainstream media, but that's not to say that it hasn't been going on. And I plug into all sorts of global networks where it's very clearly going on. So I think it's like when you have a sort of underground current that is gaining momentum, then gradually it finds its way to the surface.
Underlying, so, I'll give you underlying.
And that, you know, I know that that's really happening, and it's really happening globally. But I think, you know, there's also this sense of, like, there's so much invested interest in maintaining the status quo and the economic growth, and huge investments, you know, from multinationals in that. So just to try and link it to the topic that we started out on, you know, I just think it's still, you know, these are all the signs of a severe imbalance, when there's so much emphasis on unbridled growth at any cost, you know, and the cost is immense, as I think more and more people are aware of that.
I think
now,
we're recognizing
but not necessarily
that. Yeah.
Recognizing it, but
we got to go. Yeah. We've talked our way through. It's gone again. The time has left us. Janie Francis, it's been great to have you on the show again today. It's been lovely. Thank you so much. Trying to reset and relax and allow yourself to relax, I think is our lesson today. Well, talking of people with special talents, Anna B is a special talent who we've had on the show before, and she's got a new single called The Art of Not Falling Apart, which relates to mental health. I thought it was a good choice.
Very relevant. It is, yeah, isn't it? Great.
And so do stay tuned. We'll play out with Anna B's new song, new single available now. The Julie Mullen of this world, though, is currently waiting in the cat litter room to bring us her cake hole with Greg Freeman and Lucy English on the radio following this show directly. Do stay tuned and thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.
She couldn't get herself out. The trees grew taller, the branches longer, and all she could do was shout. She screamed and screamed till her voice turned black, but no one could hear her cries. Truth is, nobody listened because all she ever told were lies. But the forest, it had a magic plant. She used to drink her tears away. She drank it dry till the forest died, and she washed up on a bay. Soft and the sun was warm, and she thought she could find her way home. All she tried them all, she cried and realized she was all alone. When there's no way out and you're too far in, do you want it to end or begin again? When you think it's gonna stop, you go right back to the start. When you don't know where you've been or where you are, to her knees, looked up to the heavens and prayed to God, oh God, oh please. When there's no way out and you're too far in, do you want it to end or begin again? When you think it's gonna stop, you go right back to the start. You don't know where you've been or where you are. It's the art. There's a place that she goes that nobody knows, where no one gets to see inside her mind. This place that she goes with all its highs and lows, be sure to find her there another time. Another time. When there's no apart.